You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Let's do it.
Welcome, Chiefs Kingdom, to another Out of Structure podcast on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. This is Matt Stagner, joined as always with RKJ. Ron, how you feeling after last night's victory over the Denver Broncos, 22-9, the Chiefs over the Broncos?
Five straight wins this season, 12 straight over the Donkeys. Last time the Broncos beat us, I said this on the AP Film Room last week, but I was a senior in high school and our football season had just started, and that just seems so long ago, but that's just how long it's been since the Chiefs have lost to the Denver Broncos. Nice to kind of be the big brother in a rivalry this bad. We were always the little brother, and tides have definitely turned these last few years, Stags, I would say.
Absolutely. I'm a little bit older, so you know I can't make the same claim, but yeah. it has been a bit, and it is good to see the domination over the AFC West continue just in general for this Kansas City team. As I always like the division opponents. You never know what you're going to get from a division game. The tendencies, the stats, the point spread, all that stuff seems to go out the window. And it's just about beating the team in front of you on that day and whatever it takes to get it done. I think you saw a little bit of that yesterday from the Kansas City Chiefs. They seemed to do what they had to do to get this win and to get out of there. Maybe they held a little bit back, or maybe there were some things that they could have done better, or they could have been more aggressive here and there. But I think they felt in control of this game, and they walked away with the win, and they're moving on with the ability now to play for that number one seed in the AFC, which is so important to have a potential bye in the playoffs, make that path to another Super Bowl run that much easier. Really good to get this one out of the way and just kind of continue on this second half of the season and taking care of business against the division opponents.
Yeah, there's two sides to how the Chiefs are winning right now. You know, and we Chiefs fans are familiar. If you've been a Chiefs fan in the Andy Reid era, you know, still a majority of the Andy Reid era was with Alex Smith at quarterback, right? And this is exactly the formula for how they used to win with him at the helm, where they were a very successful regular season team because they executed this game plan we saw that they executed against the Broncos. Starts with the opening script, man. They come out, you know, score a quick touchdown. You know, obviously get to 10-0 as well. And then they coast and they trust a team that's always been good with special teams, a hot defense right now. And they trust them to kind of get them to the finish line. And that's always been the frustrating part about it as a Chiefs fan, right? Is that Andy just seems to kind of, you know, maybe trust that a little too much to work. And with Alex Smith, it was maybe a little more, okay, justified, like, okay, you don't want, you know, Alex isn't going to be, you know, putting up a bunch of points anyway, you know, let the run game kind of work, let Alex kind of dink and dunk and kind of take up time of possession. You know, when you have Mahomes, you don't want to see that as much. But right now it does seem like Andy's kind of trusting to kind of go back to that where they're winning ugly. He's trusting the other phases of the team to get it done. And they kind of coast to a victory after a 10-0 kind of start to the game. So like I said, there's pros and cons to it. You know, it's good to see them winning like that, Stags, but it's also frustrating that they're not able to kind of win like that we've seen them win in these past few years in the Mahomes era, where they're able to put up, you know, 30 points without even breaking a sweat. Now they're barely, you know, they're working a lot of sweat and blood and sweat to get to, you know, like 16 points scored offensively. It's just a different time right now to win as the Chiefs are, but they're doing it. They're getting it done.
It was good to see them start off with a lead and play with the lead. The defense obviously felt more comfortable in that situation, and the pass rush was able to get after it just a little bit. What did you think of the opening script that got them out to that quick 7-0 and then eventually 10-0 lead?
Yeah, so that's the thing. The opening script was successful, but it wasn't this special Andy Reid coming off a bye, you know, getting it done, you know, all these, you know, a Tyreek Hill reverse or you know, a Travis Kelce screen, you know, or something, you know, where it's kind of these creative plays. You know, we saw last week against Dallas, a couple weeks ago, I should say, Travis scores on a direct snap, you know, a run for a touchdown. It wasn't any of that. It was very basic play calling. And it was the entire length of the field. We actually saw Mahomes score a touchdown on just a basic straight drop back. You know, the pocket kind of came in on him a little bit. He stepped up beautifully, kind of maneuvered it well, timed it well, and made an angle towards the front pylon. So, you know, that kind of shows you that it wasn't all these design plays coming out of this bye week that maybe we anticipated from Andy Reid. It was a little bit of just, you know, we're going to run our basic stuff and just trust it to happen. And going into that opening script, you know, past the first drive, the second drive started off with a well-designed play, I will say. You know, Clyde getting that screen pass going about 30 yards. You know, that's part of that opening script, in my opinion, those first 15 plays. But I guess my whole point is that it just seemed like it was kind of just executing their basic game plan. And I just don't get why that didn't happen through the rest of the game. You know, and we'll get into more stuff on, you know, specifics on why maybe, you know, in certain instances it didn't happen, but the opening script wasn't anything special. It was pretty much just Andy, you know, the offense running, you know, their basic stuff and executing it. And then the rest of the game, they didn't execute it. So that's the puzzling part about it, but they got it done. It's smarter, or I guess it's better to have that be done early in the game than, you know, kind of find execution late in the game, get out to an early lead. And that's exactly what they did.
It was kind of a weird game statistically. And I noticed that you've got Darrell Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire making up 60% of the offense. Darrell was your leading receiver. Clyde was your leading rusher. And Darrell was your second leading rusher, and Clyde was your second leading receiver. So those guys were really the offense. And there wasn't a lot of contributions from the other pass catchers. In fact, there were some negative plays from those guys. The drops came back to haunt the Chiefs once again. But it was interesting to see the running backs really featured in this game, and almost an even split. You know, Clyde had more carries, but the production overall between the two was fairly similar in both the run and the pass. Both had opportunities in both phases of the game and did okay with them.
Yeah, it was nice to see them both kind of have good games. Clyde's still working his way back. It wasn't their most efficient game, and that's one thing that kind of bugs me about the way the Chiefs offense went about, you know, this game is, it does seem like they just tend to really rely on zone blocking. And hey, it works because Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, these guys are monsters just shoving guys out of the way and kind of almost just moving the line of scrimmage 3 or 4 yards, you know, in front of the running back and allowing them to get those big gains at times. But it just, that's not going to work all the time because zones just aren't made for big runs. Zone runs are kind of just made to get those 4, 5, 6 yard chunks. And yeah, they'll get those at times, but man, for some reason, they just refuse to. You see it on short yardage conversions, Stags, and you see it where they do these, you know, the guard pulls and a fullback, you know, hits the linebacker in the hole and the running back pops open. They tend to only do those on short yardage. And I've been on this podcast so many times over and over talking about how they need to run those plays just more often. And it just seems like they don't. And I feel like it's not Clyde and Darrell's fault that they're just continuing to be run, you know, on these outside zones out of shotgun where they're running horizontal to the line of scrimmage to start. I just get them downhill more, and it just seems like the coaching staff refuses to do it. And that kind of goes into my conservative play call and the thing I'm complaining about, kind of the Alex Smith, Andy Reid era where we called it shutdown mode, I think we all called it back then. It just seems like Andy doesn't want to – is just kind of, you know, running his zone runs and kind of using them as just like time crunchers and kind of, hey, we'll get 4 or 5 yards here. Instead of using the run game, which I think they can, as an actual way to attack the defense, a way to create explosive plays, they're just refusing to do that, it seems like. But the running backs seem ready to do it. I mean, you just saw it tonight. Like you mentioned 60% of the total yards. They're in playmaking mode right now. Both players are. They're just not, in my opinion, being put in the right positions in the run game specifically.
And you do have the offensive line for it. So the more power run, gap scheme type stuff they run, I think the better. And those are the types of plays that it often takes a few to get going, right? So you got to be consistent with it. You can't just throw one in here and there. You've got to run a series of those types of plays and mix in some play action and some other stuff to keep defensive honest. There was not a lot of – there wasn't a ton of creativity, I don't think, in the game plan overall. You know, whether it was just not – there wasn't any trick plays. There wasn't a lot of, you know, end-around, reverse type action. There was a couple of screens, one beautifully designed and executed and one very predictable and completely blown up, you know, those in those first couple drives. But – I think you saw it on the very first play of the game. They ran Clyde straight ahead, and it ended up being a was a 9 or 10 yard game.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's what I'm saying. That those zone runs do work and get those chunk yard gains at times because of who you have in on that line of scrimmage, where guys are just bullies, just shoving dudes off the line of scrimmage. It's just they're not designed to consistently get those big plays because they are easier to defend in terms of just, you know, not allowing them to be big chunk plays. They're not easy to defend in terms of, you know, over and over, you know, stopping them for 5 or 6 yards. And that's why Andy likes them, because they are kind of just, they wear you out a little bit. The defense just kind of gets tired of running against them. But you know what else the defense gets tired of is Trey Smith coming and blowing them up and Orlando Brown coming down and shoving you, you know, down 3 or 4 yards, at, you know, down the line of scrimmage, that sort of thing. It just doesn't seem like the Chiefs trust it as much. But as I've kind of been saying, I feel like that's in their back pocket and they could pull it out at any time. It could be in January. Could be, you know, when they really need it, and it just feels like it's there, and they just maybe they're kind of just saving it, you know, not wanting defenses to know that they're willing to do that. Maybe
it's hard to tell. The other thing that was conspicuously inconspicuous against the Broncos were the third wide receiving threat, you know, those the Mecole Hardmans, the Josh Gordons, between the two of them, they had one target total. That was Mecole's, I think it was like a 12 yard gain, pretty. In one solid play, and then invisible the rest of the game. Very few snaps for Mecole, very few snaps for Gordon overall. What's going on with the rest of the receiving core?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't help when Hill and Kelsey themselves aren't doing, you know, maybe their job. You know, one thing I found amazing is that Hill did not see a reception after the seven minute mark in the first quarter. He went the entire rest of the game without a catch. Unbelievable. You know, and obviously had the couple drops in the second half that turned, you know, one of them turned into an interception. So the fact that your elite players aren't making the plays to kind of make up for it makes it look a lot worse. But I got like Byron Pringle having a couple drops. One of them would have got them closer to the red zone, although he did make up for it on a play, you know, kind of following that. Gordon not seeing a target, you know, Mecole just not being able to find a place in this offense right now for whatever reason. And I don't know. It does seem like it's kind of on them. Like it does seem like the passing offense, you know, Mahomes is getting, you know, he got decent pass protection against Denver, I will say. But they were just taking away Hill and Kelsey, and, you know, no other guy was really stepping up. And that's kind of been the theme this year after a few spurts where, you know, the Baltimore game, you know, they all had good games and other games as well. But, that, you know, more often than not, you know, this third receiver, whoever it's supposed to be, is not stepping up. I mean, it was Daryl Williams wide receiver or receiver three right now, Stags? Is that where we're at? Is Daryl Williams the third best receiver on this team? I think we're there.
I don't know about that. We'll talk about receivers in just a minute, but there's I think some of it's just game plan and the flow of the game and just kind of how things go. You know, statistically, this was one of the worst, if not the worst game of Mahomes' career. Again, I feel like we've said that a couple times this year, but his 44 QBR, his 184 yards on 29 attempts, you know, just and plus the interception, which statistically goes against him, but once again bounced off the hands of a receiver into the waiting arms of a defender. It was a strange game offensively, production wise. You know, if he only had 15 completions and six of those went to the running backs, there weren't a lot of targets and completions to go around for the rest of the receiving group. This just was an odd game, and a game on the offensive side of the ball, just a game where they didn't get a ton going, especially passing the ball. And it was just a quiet day for the most part for the Chiefs offense. Now the Chiefs defense actually was really the story of the game. And I don't know if you had a couple takeaways on the defensive side of the ball. The first one that I had was the run defense. I think a lot of people are going to look at the box score and they're going to say, man, you know, this Williams kid just ran all over him. You know, this was a bad day for the Chiefs' run defense. And if you watch the game, there were stretches, there were drives where the Broncos looked dominant running the football against the Chiefs' defense. Part of it was this kid breaks every tackle, and he's just impossible to bring down. And part of it was the Denver offensive line was keyed in, run blocking. They got a couple of monsters on that front, young guys like Quinn Miners that are just out there playing like Trey Smith, you know. And so to me, watching the game, I never felt like it was out of hand. I never felt like the defense was not going to eventually get a stop, even when the run defense, even when the Broncos were able to run the ball well. To me, that doesn't say the Chiefs have a bad run defense again. It's just one of those days where you ran into kind of a buzzsaw. But it almost felt like the Chiefs were content in letting them move the ball on the ground a little bit because they knew that when push came to shove, they could shut down Teddy Bridgewater in the passing offense.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I was kind of concerned about going into the game is that the Chiefs would commit to stopping the run and forcing Teddy Bridgewater to, beat them. And I think they kind of did, you know, they kind of did the opposite where they said, hey, you know, run a little bit. We're going to make it harder on Teddy to get the pass game going with receivers like, you know, the trio they have is one of the best in the NFL, no doubt. Guys like Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton are really good on the outside. And cornerbacks Traverius Ward and, you know, plays another great game. He's continuing to play well. But also, you know, DeAndre Baker plays well too, you know, kind of coming in. Actually, Mike Hughes started the game, but DeAndre Baker played the rest of it. So, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit with the coverage, I guess. But in terms of the run defense, I guess my point was that there was only one real stretch where it was a problem. It was two drives. Actually, one of them ended up 20 plays, but it was a 30-play sequence. Two drives took up 30 plays. Guess how many points they allowed? Three freaking points on those 30, you know, and 30 plays, you know, given up where all those run defense. Yeah, there was a lot of gashed runs, 7 or 8 yard runs. But the thing about this defense right now is how they're playing situationally. This third down defense is one of the best in the league right now. They have been. They're over this 5-game winning streak. They're allowing a conversion percentage of 25.8%, which is the best in the entire NFL, according to our guy Matt McMullen with the Chiefs, in that stretch, in that 5-game stretch. And it's because, yeah, the run defense in that stretch wasn't getting them to third down, but as soon as they were in that stretch, they were 2 for 6 on third down. Now, Denver was aggressive on fourth down, and that's why they were able to kind of get that, continue that drive. I think they had two fourth down conversions and 3 attempts on that 20-play drive. But all that to say is the run defense only matters to an extent. If you can't finish the drive, if you can't get it into the end zone, if you can't, you know, get a chunk play with the passing game, you're just wasting time for yourself to try and score and get back in this game, because eventually this third down and fourth down defense is going to stop you. And that's exactly what happened. Spags is just dialing it up right now on that specific down. And it really makes, you know, a run defense that, you know, maybe a few plays gives up chunk plays. It really doesn't matter because once they get to third down, they're getting stopped a quarter of the time, 1 out of 4 times, a ridiculous rate right now.
That's why I felt like it was a strategic move, because they were all over Bridgewater from a pressure perspective when he did attempt to pass. And so I think the coverage was fantastic all day long, just like you said. So it's almost like they were daring them to run the ball and saying, you know, we'll battle. You know, they were consistently attacking against the run. They just didn't always get the job done right away. But sooner or later, just like when the way the teams have played the Kansas City Chiefs so far this season, if you force teams to go on 10-play, 20-play drives, sooner or later they're going to make a mistake, or sooner or later your guys are going to make a play just as likely as theirs. So I think against these Broncos, this wasn't a bad approach. It made them completely one-dimensional. I never felt like Teddy Bridgewater was going to be a threat. Every time he dropped back, it looked like the Chiefs' defense had his number. So if that's the case, you can make the team one-dimensional, even if they're good at that one dimension. Most of the time, you're going to be okay. And I think the fact that they were able to force some turnovers in the passing game and on special teams made this a game where the run defense just – or the fact that they were able to run the ball just didn't matter. By the time it was a two- or three-possession game, Let them run the ball all they want to.
Yeah, and so the run defense was paired with just great play by the back end, and that's kind of been the highlight to me over this stretch of wins is how good the secondary has been playing. But I'm also going to include the linebackers in that discussion as we talk about this game last night. I mentioned, Ward playing well again, Baker continuing. We'll talk about him a little more. But how about Juan Thornhill getting that interception? It was great to see him make a play. Hey, you're probably going to see that play if you're watching at home and say, oh, that was a terrible play with the quarterback. He just throws it right to Thornhill. I don't even know how good of a play that is for Thornhill. Well, I want to point out, though, that coverage, the way they were using Thornhill there, that's called the robber, and we've heard Mahomes use this as talking about ways defenses are playing them. And it's a pretty common, way to play coverage. But basically, you're going to start in two high, two deep safeties, but one of them is going to at the snap going to rotate to playing, over the entire top of the defense in a one high look. And the other safety is going to drop into kind of that intermediate area over the middle of the field and look at the quarterback's eyes and try to find where he's going and be a robber, be a thief of the football. And that's exactly what Thornhill does. And the reason that's significant is that that's usually Matthew that does that. They usually trust Matthew to play that role. I don't know how often Thornhill is trusted to play that role. And so I think that might have been why Bridgewater didn't expect Thornhill to be in that situation. I think he sees Matthew drop and thinks, oh, they're in a too high look. There's no robber here because Matthew's usually the robber. So all that to say, I think it's a good fork in the road kind of moment maybe for Thornhill that it's showing that the defensive staff is trusting him to play in important roles more. That's a very important role, and that's a wrinkle that the defense can really throw at other quarterbacks. And just like you saw, it can confuse them and allow him to throw right where Thornhill is, because Thornhill cuts, he knows he's playing over the middle. He knows Judy's to the outside of him, and there's a potentially in-breaking route to Judy, who Bridgewater likes getting the ball to. That's exactly what happens. He sits underneath it. Bridgewater tries to throw an in-breaking route to Judy. It's intercepted. So I wanted to shout out Juan Thornhill. And that was just one play, but it was a really good example of him continuing to excel and work in more into the defense, I guess. Spags trusting him a little more.
Yeah, the more versatile, interchangeable those secondary pieces are, the better for this defense. We've seen it with Snead. We've seen it with Matthew. And then Thornhill, we've always thought he had that ability, and it's nice to see it come into play. Nice to see the film study come out on game day as well. He clearly had some good anticipation on that play and knew what was coming. Yes. I think they knew that mixing things up in the middle there wasn't going to be not going to end up in a good result for Teddy Bridgewater. Let's jump to a quick little game here. We'll try to have some fun with some of these things that some Chiefs fans are worried about, or some of the national media are talking about when it comes to the Chiefs. Some of these narratives or outcomes from this game and other recent games. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, should we really panic about these items, or should we, are we okay with them? So we're going to call it, for lack of a better title, OMG or NBD. So, oh my God, this is a problem, or no big deal, don't worry about it. Let's start with Mahomes' accuracy, Ron. OMG or NBD on the accuracy issues from Pat Mahomes?
You get the stamp of approval for the naming of this game for sure. I was 100% approved behind this, but I'll go quickly here. OMG or NBD for Mahomes' accuracy? I really do think it's not as big an issue as maybe national media can make it. It's never, his accuracy has never been perfect. It's just that it never been coupled with this bad of luck in terms of passes flying off his receiver's hands into defender's hands. So no big deal, NBD.
Yeah, I'll stick with NBD just because I believe in Patrick Mahomes, and sooner or later, he's going to be the reason they win games. This particular game, it was the defense and special teams. There'll be other games like that. But when it comes down to it, there's nobody I'd rather have under center. And I think his accuracy and ball placement are part of what makes him great and part of what makes him the MVP. But in the short term, in this particular game, there were some passes that he left on the field. There were some that he's going to look at film and say he wanted back. Maybe that's another miscommunication with the receivers. Maybe it's somebody ran the wrong route. But there was a couple plays where it really seemed like there was some frustration on his part and some misses on his part. So it's on the radar, but for now we'll call it NBD. How about the lack of production from Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce? We already mentioned it, but the two of them combined for What was most disturbing for me, 13 targets and only 5 receptions between the two of them. So not only was it a lack of production, only 49 combined yards, but that 5 for 13, it's really uncharacteristic for those two guys. Should we start to worry about Hill and Kelce?
Yeah, I'd lean towards OMG for this because we've seen Kelce torch Denver in the past. We've seen Hill torch Denver in the past. You know, this is a team that the Chiefs are familiar with. This is a defense they're familiar with, and they've had success against. I mean, you know, this just popped in my head, but last year we literally scored it. Tyreek Hill literally scored a touchdown that didn't get called because we didn't challenge it. You know, I mean, they're literally scoring points that didn't even exist. I mean, that's how much they have been able to do stuff on Denver in the past. And yeah, I mean, this is one of the lowest production totals as a duo they've ever had in their career. So that out of a bye week, that is really discouraging in my opinion. You know, I'm not going to freak out about it, but it is more OMG than NBD. You know, I'm going to say it because I think, you know, we do have to acknowledge it maybe a little bit. You know, Kelce is a little older. You know, this physical coverage might be hampering him, you know, holding him down a little more than we maybe like to admit.
He's really getting beat up. And it's, you know, once or twice in a season is NBD for sure. But it feels like it's becoming a pattern with both of these players. The production is not the same as what we're used to seeing. You know, Hill is not getting loose deep or making the big plays that we expect. He's got a lot more targets this year, and he's still been productive overall, but the big plays haven't been there, and so that average per catch is way down this year. Travis Kelce, as mentioned, is really just getting beat up. There was a lot of frustration I saw on his face and in his body language against the Broncos. They were hitting him around the head and the neck and the shoulders a lot on every route, and he was frustrated by it. He was having trouble getting, you know, free releases like he typically would. So it's obvious teams have always wanted to take away those two guys. It's just never worked as well as it has this season. So yeah, I'm trending towards that being an actual concern. How about the Chiefs run defense? I already alluded to where I stand on this one, that it's NBD, given the fact that they've been very good over this win streak over the second half of the season. They ran into a Broncos team that was dedicated to the run, and they seemed content with letting them run. But OMG or NBD about the concerns with the run defense?
Yeah, no, this is quick. It's an NBD. I kind of mentioned it. You just alluded to it with, you know, this Denver offense was wanting to run the ball, has been successful at it lately. And the Chiefs, you know, didn't mind them running too much. So NBD, I think they have the talent in there right now to where, you know, you can trust the run defense when it really needs to be good. It can be good.
You bet. You saw some really positive signs there, I think, still, even when statistically the Broncos ran the ball well, the Chiefs were able to shut them down at times when it mattered on fourth down. They had some, you know, some solid play from the interior. Chris Jones had some good plays against the run. Melvin Ingram had some really good plays from the edge against the run. So, yeah, I think there was also a few less snaps for Nick Bolton this week, which, you know, he's a guy that's been really good against the run in the past. So it might have just been, again, the Chiefs running with those lighter packages, sub-packages, and letting the Broncos run a little bit and try to force Bridgewater to beat them. So we've already talked about that. Pun intended, let's not be the dead horse here. That was one of my favorite tweets of the night yesterday. I think it was Guy's Snacks, the chip making company, that said 13 in a row against Denver, it kind of feels like being a dead horse at this point. I thought that was just perfect. All right.
I didn't see that. That's hilarious. That's awesome.
All right. OMG or NBD, the fact that there's no third wide receiver target or no third receiving target after those two guys that are struggling.
As I said earlier, you know, the third receiving target is Darrell Williams. So if you're going by that, then it is OMG. I think we both talked about this in the offseason, Stags, is that, you know, this a collection of guys that play their role well and each know what they're supposed to do can be good enough to fill the need for a legitimate wide receiver too. But this group isn't doing it right now. And that's why what makes it an OMG, because you look at the Chiefs Super Bowl runs, their playoff runs, you know, they've really counted on Sammy Watkins to be a big part of the yardage game. You know, the amount of total offense they get, you know, back-to-back AFC championships, he had over 100 yards. You know, the Super Bowl run, the entire Super Bowl championship run, he was had a huge impact. So not having a guy like that that can take advantage of these defenses that are really hammering home, taking away Kelce and Hill. Right now, it looks like that's what could be the Achilles heel, you know, when we're fast forwarding to January and we're seeing, you know, an upset of this team and we're thinking about what went wrong. You know, it could come back to the fact that no one besides Kelce and Hill could make a play in the pass game. And I hate to say it, but that's just it's kind of one of those things you could maybe see being the narrative after a Chiefs loss this in the postseason.
Yeah, I think the drops to me are we're in OMG territory when it comes to drops, because that's something that could derail a drive. We saw it with Byron Pringle having two on the one drive that basically ended that drive. He came back and made some plays later and redeemed himself. But drops from Kelce and Hill, I saw the statistic that it costs them more. What is the expected play production? You're more the stat guy. But there was a stat that showed that the Chiefs have lost more production by drops from Kelce and Hill than any other team has lost from any other players. And that's something that, you know, is a concern. So I would say I've always said I don't care about the Chiefs having a number two wide receiver that's this one person. I care about them having production from across the receiving targets and role players that can step up when needed. When they're not getting any production from any receiving targets this week, that's a concern. When they're having drops, that's a concern. And when there's no consistency from those role players, I think that is a concern. So we've seen, like you said, a couple of games where those backup receivers all had great games. And then we've seen a whole bunch of games where they did a whole bunch of nothing. And so that's to me where it becomes a concern, is when they're actively hurting the offense with drops and then not having that consistency in production across the board. It could come back and bite them later on.
Yeah, and I guess that's a good point, is that it's really just you need to avoid the negative plays. You don't maybe need to have the 100-yard performances that Sammy Watkins has had, especially if the offensive coaching staff ever realizes that it can trust its running game to kind of dominate a game and actually create explosive plays if they're designed to do so. You know, that can kind of make up for maybe not having a wide receiver to legitimately, you know, a Sammy Watkins type. But yeah, you're right. Right now, they're just making too many negative plays. That's just really what it comes down to.
All right, and the last OMG or NBD is something I saw get a little bit of run on Twitter last night and this morning. There was the TV broadcast cameras caught an interaction between Mahomes and Eric Bieniemy on the sideline that made it appear that the two of them were fighting, that they were going after each other, that they were in each other's faces or yelling or you know, unhappy or frustrated. It seems like that came right after that phantom false start call on Mahomes from the shotgun formation, but it may have been some frustration about play calling or execution, and that sort of bubbled over a little bit on the sidelines. OMG or NBD about those two guys kind of going at it a little bit?
NBD, man, no big deal. It's been frustrating, you know, especially, you know, you assume these guys are confident enough in themselves that they expect to come out of a bye week and, you know, put up, you know, 30 points. I mean, that's what this offense expects, to put up the amount of points that some offenses just, you know, their best days are. So when it's kind of just this lackluster performance, yeah, it's going to be frustrating. But if you see the video, you know, I don't know, it doesn't really seem like they get in each other's faces. It just kind of seems like they're maybe just, you know, frustratingly vocalizing what is happening more than just like actually being frustrated with each other. So no big deal.
It's like when you talk to your partner at home and one of you feels like having a fight, and the other one's like, this isn't a fight, we're just talking. I don't know. It's one of those things where Bieniemy is a fiery guy. Mahomes is you know, the most competitive guy on the field, and you can see things boiling over here and there, and they're probably good behind the scenes. I don't expect it to be a big deal, but I just thought, since we saw it on Twitter, we might just bring it up in case any of you saw that and were wondering if that was a big deal or not. Yeah, I think it's unanimous here on our side that until proven otherwise, that's not a big deal. Tell you what, let's take a quick break, hear from our sponsors, pay a couple bills. We'll come back with your questions and maybe a little talk about some of the snap count takeaways that we had from this game coming off of a victory against the Broncos in prime time. So stay with us here. We'll be back right after the break on the Out of Structure podcast.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, welcome back into the AP Out of Structure podcast after a fifth straight victory Monday. Good to be here with Stags, and appreciate you guys listening. We'll get to your questions here in a second, but first let's look at the snap counts from the Chiefs win over Denver. You know, one thing I want to start on the defensive side of the ball, because we alluded to it a little earlier, but you know, one thing we all kind of called for, you know, as the season has gone on, is Hitchens maybe being benched for Bolton, you know, at that Mike linebacker position. And last night we saw Bolton actually have the second fewest snaps in the entire defensive unit out of all players that played. And Hitchens actually had his snap count go up. And this is a good opportunity to talk about maybe Hitchens looking pretty good. He was flying around the field. He missed a few tackles, obviously. You know, that's not nothing new, I guess, but he was getting there quicker. He was getting to the flat quicker. It seemed like he was flying through the line at times to make run plays against the run. You know, so Hitchens might be playing himself back into a place where they trust him to play over Bolton. Is this a OMG or MBD? Maybe let's bring the game back, Stags. What are you thinking about the linebacker position?
Yeah, it feels to me like it's just a game plan specific thing, and it's just they were probably, based on the snap counts, and again, not having time to really review it closely, but my assumption is that they were in sub packages a little bit more and out of the base defense a little bit more, where Bolton is a mainstay in that base defense. He's not yet the full-time sub package guy. And so looking at the rest of the snap counts, I think it trends in that direction, that you've got some of the lighter personnel in for more of the game against Denver. So I don't see it as a big deal. I feel like it was matchup specific here.
Yeah. And that's how they've been kind of doing. They've been mixing and matching their linebackers depending on the situation, because they will still play Bolton in the nickel sub package at times. But I think this game, they just trusted the veteran to get it done. And like I said, he was flying around the field. It was good to see. Another, defensive takeaway that we kind of already talked about, but how about DeAndre Baker? So, they start the game with Mike Hughes as that third cornerback with Snead and Ward in the nickel formations with three cornerbacks. First two drives, Hughes is out there, maybe into the third drive as well, but next thing you know, you see Baker get in the game, and he didn't come off the field after that. He played the rest of the game, ended up playing one of the highest snap counts of the entire team, and Hughes actually had the lowest snap count of the defensive unit. So it looked like, in my opinion, maybe there were some maybe initial rotational intention in terms of, hey, let's play Hughes a little bit, then Baker, and kind of switching back and forth. I think maybe that was the case, and then Baker started playing well maybe, and they said, you know what, let's just keep him in. And I think he did play well. I think he made a few plays on when covering Cortland Sutton, specifically on deep route and a slant route, both couple of good plays where, yeah, I think Baker kind of maybe earned his way to being that cornerback four when Fenton returns as well.
That may be one of the bigger surprises for me from a personnel standpoint this season, is I thought they had a big role in mind for DeAndre Baker, even potentially as a starter, depending on who's healthy and who else is in the lineup. The fact that he's been a game day inactive for a lot of weeks, and he's only really there this week because of Fenton's injury, is a little bit surprising, because I think he can play a little bit, and he showed well against Denver. He's a physical player, and he did a nice job using the boundary to his advantage in keeping the Broncos from having some big plays on the passing offense. And so, whatever that rotation is, I think it worked this week, and I'll be curious to see if that changes things going forward.
Yeah, and then lastly, on these snap count takeaways, we'll go to the offensive side. But how crazy is it as we've gotten to the point where Mecole Hardman is playing 9 snaps total on the offensive side. You didn't even see him to begin the game on offense. He was not on the first drive, maybe not the first couple drives. Finally got a touch, a design touch for him, as we usually see in the second half. But, Mecole has really dropped off, and we saw him lose his punt return job too. We haven't been able to talk about it on the pod yet, but Dave Tobe came out last week and said, hey, Mike Hughes is this team's punt returner and Mecole Hardman is not. Didn't say it as direct as I just did, but so Mecole is kind of slowly losing a grip of a role at all on this team right now. And that resulted also in DeMarcus Robinson getting a few more snaps. He was kind of trending down at one point, but he bounced back with about 50% of the snaps this game. But I think we want to focus on Hardman here maybe a little bit, Stags. How do we feel about, I think I'll just say it real quick. I think for future long-term kind of stuff, there's no reason to cut him this offseason. He's on his rookie deal. You keep him through the deal, in my opinion. You may differ on that, but no matter how he plays. But it's gotten to the point where he barely even has a role on this team. What do we do? Where do we go from here? I mean, this guy, is all of a sudden, non-existent on this team.
It's all speculation at this point. We don't have any clue what's going on inside that room. But it could be matchup related. It could be that they're trying to get Josh Gordon involved at some point. To me, if you think about the roles on this team, Hardman, they know what they have now in Mecole Hardman. He's not a wide receiver two. He's not an X receiver. He's really that gadget player, somebody that when they get the ball to him, he can make a play. But he's maybe not going to get open or be in the right spot where they want him to be. And so maybe, and again, pure speculation here on my part, but just a theory. What if they know what they have in Hardman and they'll continue to use him? They'll use him down the stretch. But for right now, what they want to do is get to figure out what they have in Josh Gordon and see if he can evolve into that wide receiver too. He's getting plenty of snaps. I mean, not a ton this week, but he's out snapping Hardman and others. I'm wondering if maybe the two of them on the field at the same time doesn't work well for this team, because Hardman's been known to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Gordon, since he's been around, I feel like that's been an issue for him as well. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just they're trying to find the right combination of receivers to be on the field at the same time. And when they have both Gordon and Hardman on the field, maybe it's just too much chaos or not enough Christmas in the route running.
You know, I think you're being a little too nice to Hardman, honestly. I think it's just, I think simply it really is that just he is not trusted to be used as a regular receiver. And I think there is some truth. I don't want to completely go against your point, because I do agree. I think they are trying to find a way to get Gordon going by having him just on the field more, having him just run routes. So even if he's not the primary read, if for whatever reason Mahomes has to scramble out and find another read, you know, he's there to make a play and potentially get going. But it just doesn't seem like they even trust Hart. You know, why isn't Hardman running the snaps that Robinson is? I mean, Robinson doesn't give you any upside as a receiver. You know, maybe Hardman's a little bit, or Robinson's a little bit better of a blocker, but not enough to be playing that much more over Hardman. So all that to say is I think we're seeing kind of the fall maybe of Hardman's, you know, projection. What we thought he was. I think we're finally starting to see it come to fruition in terms of not even having a true role on this team besides a very situational gadget player.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, this was a game where we've already talked about how they didn't have a lot of creativity. There wasn't a lot of trick plays. There wasn't a lot of misdirection or gadget type work to be had. And so again, maybe it was a little game plan specific. And then we'll see him pop back up later in the season when they feel like they need to empty the bag a little bit more offensively from a play calling perspective. They can have Hardman and Hill on the field at the same time and do some different stuff with the speed there. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not ready to call it yet. It's certainly a disturbing trend so far. But we've seen the Chiefs do different stuff with personnel where they don't agree with us on a number of occasions. So I'm going to give it a couple more games before I declare the end of Mecole Hardman.
Hey, real quick though. I know what you're saying, but I almost think that speaks to my point even more, the fact that it was a vanilla game and it was a game where you're not doing a lot of the gadget stuff, because that's the only thing Mecole is doing at this point. So that's why you didn't see him at all, is because they weren't doing the gadget stuff. If you're a player in Hardman's position, you know, kind of wanting to prove yourself, you think that'd be a good opportunity for him to just, you know, get open on regular pass routes, get open on traditional pass routes when the Denver defense is covering Hill and Kelsey so much. You think that'd be a good opportunity for him to kind of, you know, show that he can do more than just outside the created, you know, play design kind of things. And they didn't give him the opportunity to. And I think that speaks to the fact that he's not maybe able to, and the coaching staff knows that at this point, or just doesn't trust him to even, you know, have the chance to do it, which is just not a good sign for him right now.
We'll see, man. Maybe they're saving him for the playoffs. I don't know. Maybe we'll see playoff Mecole now instead of playoff Sammy. All right, let's get to some of your questions on Twitter. Christian Gumminger, at K Gumminger on Twitter. Did the Chiefs go vanilla on offense once they realized they didn't need to show anything just to beat these Broncos?
Yeah, and he mentions that he didn't see anything new or innovative coming out of the bye, which we talked about a little bit. That is kind of surprising to an extent, but you know, that is maybe Andy just kind of flexing his muscles and trusting his team that. And he does this, man. And this is not a new thing. I mean, this has been his entire career. Andy sometimes just, if he doesn't need to show anything, he won't. He'll trust his offense to do enough, and to trust his defense if they're playing well to do enough to win. And that's what we saw. So yeah, it was vanilla. Your eyes don't deceive you, Christian. Shout out my guy, Christian. You know, one of our great writers at AP. But I think it is very possible that Andy, you know, said there's no reason we even need to, you know, go all out for this play design, I guess, here. They'll just win, you know, mano a mano kind of thing.
Yeah, and some of that could also just be this team saying, we need to execute better with the basics of our offense. And so if we can get away with it, let's just run the basics over and over again, knowing that we can go deeper into the bag when we need to. So I don't know. I feel like that's, in some ways, discounting the Broncos, saying that they're treating it like almost like a training camp game, but I think in some ways the coaching staff does, you know, save those plays for when they feel like they need them, and you see more trick plays, more fun stuff in bigger games, and there's a reason for that. I think he's got to balance the need to execute the basics and the need to mix things up, and if you don't need to mix it up, then keep hammering them with the basics. As long as you can do that and win, it's not a problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, you know, the we got another question here from our guy Steve Williams. He's been asking good questions. So he kind of goes, you know, a little off on a rant a little bit. The offense in its current state will not win a playoff game. If this offense gets rolling along with these types of defense performances, we have a championship team, which, yeah, I think we all agree with. What do you think this is the key to unlocking this team's championship potential, Stags? He thinks personally he better luck couldn't hurt, which I think obviously I think every football team could use some good luck at this point of the season. But we've seen the turnovers. We've seen all that. Pray that Andy doesn't get too conservative. He mentions that, too, as we've talked about. Do you have a specific key that you think could unlock this team's championship potential?
Yeah, I mean, we had a few questions sort of around this idea of how far can the Chiefs go if the defense is carrying them. Braden Bowe asked, do you believe that even if they get in the playoffs and the offense is at this level, can they even compete with the Bucs, the Packers, the Rams, if they're not putting up 30 a game? You know, I think you're right. I think both of these guys are right to be worried about that. I think it's nice to see the defense play well and be able to carry this team. But sooner or later, you're going to have to score points to win. And, you know, it might be luck. It might be execution. It might be play calling to some extent. And unfortunately, some of it might be personnel. So there's a lot of different things that have not quite been right about this offense. To me, the key to get to Steve's question, the key to unlocking the championship potential is always going to be Patrick Mahomes. If the defense plays like this and Mahomes plays like Mahomes, they're going to win the Super Bowl. It's as simple as that. The receivers need to be better, you know, whatever. But if Mahomes plays like he's capable of playing, and the defense is holding teams to 17 or less every single week, then I have no doubt that this team is a championship football team.
Yeah, I think we all – I mean, I think Mahomes didn't play bad yesterday, but we still didn't see what Mahomes can do, how good he can play. And as we talked about the receivers not doing much, you know, and some of the drops and stuff, Mahomes still could have played better, and it still could have – that still could have helped them put up more points, so – I think that's very fair. I agree with you to an extent. I think the key, though, is finding another guy that can really make plays in certain situations. I think Pringle's been situationally, you know, decent this year. He has had some drops that really, you know, rub you the wrong way. I think if they continue to get Clyde kind of going in the pass game and kind of timing up those and designing those well, you know, Andy kind of getting in his bag with Clyde in the pass game specifically, that could maybe be a key to kind of opening up this offense a little more.
Yeah, balance, I think, would be another key. I agree. I mean, just being able to be less predictable. You know, we keep going back to this vanilla play calling that they had this week. I think all season there's been this kind of feeling of, you know, let's where's the creativity? Where is the where are they mixing it up? Sometimes when they run the ball, you know they're going to run the ball. Sometimes when they drop back to pass, you know they're looking for Hill and Kelsey. So being able to mix things up a little bit, executing both in the pass and the run game, and being able to keep teams off balance, you know, it is a big key. And I think we've proven that Mahomes can't do it himself. So I'm arguing with my own point here a little bit. But if Mahomes is playing right and the team is balanced on offense – and they're playing defense like they are, then they're unbeatable. So, you know, you need two out of three of those elements to win consistently. If you get all three, then there's going to be a parade.
Yeah. And so speaking of kind of trying to get down the stretch and become a championship team, there's other teams that are threatening the Chiefs in this AFC, you know, to take the crown from them. Got a big one. If you guys are listening on Monday, you know, afternoon, evening after work, you got a big one tonight between the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots in Buffalo on Monday Night Football. Now, our guy Nate Kansas asks us, who do we want to win tonight? And I think this is an interesting question because you kind of have to do a little research to think about, wait, which team do we really actually want to lose and kind of drop in the standings? Because these two teams still have to play each other twice. There's another matchup coming in a couple weeks. I actually think that the way to look at this is that there's not really a real team to root for in this first matchup, but you want them to split. So whoever wins this first matchup, you'd maybe like them to lose that second matchup so they each have five losses and you have four losses right now. You know, each team's going to have that tiebreaker over you in the AFC, depending on, you know, their obviously you lost to the Bills head to head, but the Patriots have a better AFC record. So yeah, I'd say root for a good game tonight, you know, watch an enjoyable football game. And then next time they come around, root for the loser of the original game.
Way to hedge your bets there, Ron. No, you're right. The Patriots are 6-1 in the AFC. The Chiefs are 3-4. So yeah, that's going to be difficult to overcome from a tiebreaker perspective. They are the team that I'm the most worried about at this point, the team that I least want to see the Chiefs face in the playoffs, not because I think they have a quarterback that can that's going to dominate them, but I think just going against a Bill Belichick team that's playing well in the playoffs is not a position you want to be in if you can avoid it. But I also really want the Chiefs to figure out a way to get that one seed and have that bye. So even if it means, you know, that they face the Patriots at some point, you know, I think at least for this game, I'm going to root for the Bills, because if they have to face one of these two teams later on, the Bills are the more flawed team. They're the team that's the less consistent at this point. And so, you know, if they have to face somebody in the AFC Championship game between these two, I'll take Buffalo. So whatever gives New England the harder path to get to that championship game, I think the better. So for now, you're right. You hope they split. But for this game, for this week, I am a part of Bills Mafia.
Bills Mafia is a sister team, I feel like, to the Chiefs. So shout out Bills Mafia. But yeah, I think the other thing to think about it too is which team would you rather be able to leapfrog in the standings and have them come, and you could leapfrog both, obviously, and have both of them come to Arrowhead. But I think I'd rather see a rookie quarterback in Arrowhead. Josh Allen has won a game in Arrowhead in a full capacity stadium at this point. I don't think he played necessarily well that game. I think the Chiefs really handed the Bills that game and just laid over or rolled over. But I would still rather see Mac Jones in Arrowhead, you know, rather than Josh Allen, even though I think Mac Jones actually might be playing better, more sound fundamental football right now than Josh Allen. I still would rather see a rookie quarterback try to come into Arrowhead and win rather than an experienced one.
That's fair. I mean, again, I keep going back to this idea of the Chiefs getting the one seed, and right, which of these two teams is more likely to have losses between now and the end of the season. And I think that's probably Buffalo. I think New England is more of a threat to win out. So again, that tips the scales a little bit in my mind towards the Bills on Monday night. And then let's see how the rest of the season plays out, because I think the Bills could easily drop at least one more game. If they do split, like you said, that's 5 losses apiece. The Chiefs are in good shape for that one seed, as long as they take care of business. So with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. I think this has been a good run for the Chiefs. It's exciting to see what's possible and what's ahead of them. They've got 2 of the 3 phases hitting on all cylinders. And so and once the inevitable happens and Patrick Mahomes and the offense come around, it's going to be fun to watch this team down the stretch. I hope everyone is doing well. I'm looking forward to the holidays. Thanks for listening, spending some time with us here on the Out of Structure podcast and all of the Arrowhead Pride podcast networks. Don't forget to rate and review wherever you do that. And join us next week for hopefully another Victory Monday conversation. So thanks, Ron. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a good week.
The Current podcast is back with an exciting new season featuring marketing executives from the world's most influential brands. Tune in to hear what's driving conversation in the fast-moving world of digital advertising, with unique insights from brands as diverse as Hilton, Instacart, Moderna, Major League Soccer, and more. And in this presidential election season, The Current explores what a national political advertiser like the National Republican Senatorial Committee and a major CPG brand like Hershey can learn from each other. Listen in and subscribe to The Current at thecurrent.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.